This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
New signs of trouble in the housing market.
Some economists are talking about a double dip in home prices.
From APM, American Public Media, hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It's Monday, the 9th day of May.
Coming up, we'll dig into this morning's home price report from Zillow.com.
Also, how'd you like to pay a tax based not on how much gas you buy, but on how many miles you drive?
An island nation in the South Pacific wants to change time zones.
And a small town in the south of France prepares for an influx of visitors hoping to avoid the apocalypse.
Those stories and more coming up right here on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Make it a working lunch. Listen to the Marketplace Midday Update podcast for the day's top business headlines. Subscribe on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
We start today with the housing market. Real estate website Zillow.com is out with a report today that says home prices, home values, just keep on falling, down 3% between the last quarter of 2010 and the first quarter of this year. All told, so far, we've seen 57 straight months of home prices going down. From Washington, here's Marketplace's David Gura.
The federal government offered big tax breaks to home buyers till last summer. The report says that when those incentives went away, the number of sales dropped dramatically. Tony Sanders teaches real estate finance at George Mason University.
It took what little energy there was in the system and zapped it out. So now there's nothing left.
There are more than 2 million homes in foreclosure across the U.S., and Paul Dales of Capital Economics says that's dragging down the market even more.
Foreclosures just sell at a very, very discounted price, and that drags the overall price indices down.
And on top of that, a house in foreclosure brings down the prices of other homes in the neighborhood. The report paints a pretty grim picture. Another 1.5 million Americans are seriously delinquent on their mortgage payments. Economist Tony Sanders says we're far from seeing the market improve.
It can go lower.
Some economists say things may stabilize in 2012, but it could take another year before prices start going up. In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
And let's get some analysis now from Julia Coronado. She's chief economist with the investment bank BNP Paribas, and she joins us now as she does every Monday. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, it seems like economists are really having to keep readjusting their predictions for the housing market each time we get bad news like this.
Yes, housing has been a consistent disappointment throughout the recovery. And what it appears is that there really has been a structural change in housing demand. So, for example, we see younger people putting off that first decision to buy a home later and later, delaying it later and later. We're seeing more college students living at home with their parents during college. And these changes have proved to be pretty lasting. So the taste for home ownership is a lot lower than it used to be.
Well, what's your current forecast, and what do you think it's going to take to get the housing market turned around?
Well, I think, unfortunately, given the tremendous amount of supply that we still have coming onto the market from the foreclosed properties and from people who delayed selling their home as they tried to wait out the market, will really continue to put downward pressure on prices. So I think we're going to continue to see these moderate declines throughout this year. And then perhaps by the end of the year, we'll be at a new true equilibrium for home prices.
Julia Coronado, chief economist with the investment bank BNP Paribas, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Well, to the White House now, which is pushing back against a leaked report involving a new driving tax. The Department of Transportation is reportedly looking into the idea of taxing drivers based on how many miles they drive and using that revenue to maintain roads and highways. Marketplace's Eve Tro reports.
American highways need major repairs, and the flat per-gallon gas tax won't cover it, especially as people drive more fuel-efficient cars. UCLA transportation professor Brian Taylor says in the past, we'd raise the tax.
The first response is, well, that's a terrible idea. I don't like that. What else do you have?
Taylor says today it's feasible to charge people based on how much they drive.
We now have the ability with GPS, with electronic systems that can track vehicles, to have drivers pay directly for how much they use the roadways.
But a tax on mileage could hit commercial trucking particularly hard, says Bruce Belzowski at the University of Michigan Transportation Institute. And we might all pay for that.
Because the added cost that you're charging the companies many times gets transferred to the consumer in terms of the cost of product.
He says trucking companies invested heavily to meet federal fuel efficiency standards. Slapping them with a driving tax on top of that wouldn't be fair. I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org.
Now to the Marketplace global perspective. High-level meetings between U.S. and Chinese officials get underway today. Among the items on the agenda, America's big trade deficit with China and currency exchange rates. Critics say China's manipulated the yuan to sell more products on the global market. Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz reports.
So you're going on a trip to China and you need to change some money. All things being equal, one of your dollars should buy 4 yuan. That's what economists at the IMF say is the fairest exchange rate given the country's finances. But not all things are equal. In fact, if you ask your bank to change $1 into Chinese currency today, you'd get more than 6 yuan. That seems like a good thing. Maybe you could buy some more stuff on your trip. But on the global scale, an undervalued currency means China can export its products at cheaper prices, which, according to many members of Congress, puts American manufacturers at a disadvantage. In fact, China has been raising the value of the currency in recent years. But according to economist Andy Rothman, not everyone's happy with the pace.
The party's approach is gradual, slower is better. It's less risky than doing things abruptly. And they would argue that a 5 to 7% appreciation pace every year, which is what they did between 2005 and 2008 and again today, is actually not so slow.
But Chinese officials will hear a very different opinion this week as they sit down with their American counterparts. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
The European Union is preparing to offer more financial help to Greece. That's on top of last year's near $160 billion bailout. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us from London with the latest on that. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
So why does Greece need more help?
Well, the markets have forced this issue. They believe that Greece is in so much debt and its economy is so deeply mired in recession that it's not going to be able to go back to the markets and borrow next year as planned. I mean, when you look at the interest rates, Steve, that the Greeks now have to pay for long-term loans, 15%. That compares with 3% for Germany. That says there's a risk of a Greek default, and the Greeks you can't pay 15% for their money. It's unsustainable.
Yeah, what sort of help, though, is Greece going to get, Stephen?
Well, it might be more cash, it might be more time to pay, but there's little doubt they will get some help. Martina Stivas of the Greek Free newspaper says the EU can't afford for Greece to default because that might lead to other bailed-out countries also defaulting, and that would be disastrous.
If you add up the Greek debt, the Irish debt, the Portuguese debt, and potentially the Spanish debt, we've got a really explosive situation for European banks, especially in France and in Germany, who are massively exposed to these sovereign borrowers.
Nevertheless, the Germans in particular are not going to be happy about cutting the Greeks some slack because other bailed-out countries might demand easier terms too. And the Germans are terrified that these loans, these bailout loans, are going to turn into grants and Germany will end up picking up the tab.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Stephen, thank you.
Okay, Steve.
To the Ivory Coast now, where cocoa bean exports have been restarted. Shipments were blocked earlier this year because of political unrest in the country. And as Marketplace's Jennifer Collins reports, the restart means a worldwide cocoa shortage could very quickly turn into a surplus.
Ivory Coast produces about a third of the world's cocoa. And this year, it's been rainy and warm there.
Just absolutely ideal weather conditions for West African production.
Commodities analyst Gary Mead says that's about to produce what Willy Wonka and company might turn into a chocolate...
A chocolate river.
That's the most fantastic thing I've ever seen.
10,000 gallons an hour.
Morningstar analyst Catherine Young says cocoa production could be up as much as 10% this year. Demand, though, wears Augustus Gloop when you need him.
consumption has only increased about 3%.
Still, Gary Mead says even if conditions are perfect for cocoa farmers next year,
lovers of premium chocolate need to be prepared to pay progressively more.
That's because the other ingredients in chocolate, namely milk, remain very pricey. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
The South Pacific island nation of Samoa will later this year move its clocks forward by a day in an effort to boost the economy there. Samoa will switch from the east side of the international dateline to the west side. From Sydney, Australia, the BBC's Phil Mercer reports.
By the end of the year, Samoa will shift its clocks forward by 23 hours so that it can be on the same day as the week as Australia, New Zealand and Eastern Asia. Samoa's Prime Minister Tuiloiapa Sailele says the switch makes good economic sense.
Come Friday, it is already Saturday in New Zealand and other Asian countries, and most of the business houses would be closed. So by aligning ourselves with the time zone that is more appropriate for us, it would be extremely beneficial.
This is the second major move Samoa has made to align itself more closely with Australia and New Zealand. In 2009, the government brought in new laws that switched cars to driving on the left side of the road instead of the right. Some predicted chaos, but there were few hiccups, and the government is hoping Samoa's redrawing of the international dateline will be as painless. The move will, though, impact on neighbouring American Samoa. An hour's plane ride to the east, which come 2012, will be almost a day behind. In Sydney, I'm the BBC's Phil Mercer for Marketplace.
There is a list out today, Steve, that says Apple is the most valuable brand in the world. That doesn't really seem too surprising, considering all the iPods and iPads and everything else out there. The Apple brand, just the brand, is now worth $153 billion, according to the consultancy Millward Brown. And we've got the full list of the best brand values up at marketplace.org. Now, Steve, you'd think that the big winners would be tech, but what about the big losers? Any guesses?
Oh, I'm thinking the oil companies right
oil
now.
Oil companies, yeah. For sure, and yeah. The big banks. That's no big surprise.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also Nintendo. The value of the Nintendo brand is down 37%, which is, it seems, more than just a wee bit.
Oh. According to the United Nations, the population of planet Earth, Jeremy, will top 7 billion on Halloween this year.
Wow.
That's on October 31st. And chances are that child will be born in India.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Now, India will likely replace China as the world's most populous nation in the next 15 years. And the population growth there in India is the subject of today's Globalist Quiz. So we're going to welcome our good friend Stefan Richter from theglobalist.com, our quiz master this morning. Good morning, Stefan.
Good morning, Steve. Ready for today's Globalist Quiz?
I am ready. Let's do it.
So my question to you is, India now has 1.2 billion people.
Yes.
It increased, obviously, the Indian population over the last decade. Question is, just by how much did the population of India increase by the equivalent of the entire population of A, Germany, B, Russia, C, Pakistan, or D, the United States?
I'm going to say Germany.
That is a good answer only if I'd asked you by how much the global population in total increases each year, which is by an entire Germany,
yeah.
82 million people.
But yeah.
India has increased, obviously, by more.
All right. Let's go with Russia.
No Russia.
No Russia.
No Russia.
Well, Pakistan.
Can you imagine what that means in terms of Pakistani psychology, that India increased its population by 181 million people over one decade, whereas Pakistan only has 189 million people in total? But here's the real upshot for our American listeners. Between now and 2035, the population of India is expected to rise by 313 million people.
About the population of the United States.
Imagine what that does to India, which, yes, has a nice large geography, but a lot of people, and adding 300 million people between now and then. Imagine the pressures on the environment and on the earth altogether.
Stefan Richter from The Globalist. Stefan, thanks.
Good to have been with you today.
There is a billboard up on my commute to work, Steve. I don't know about yours, but on mine, there's one that says that the Judgment Day is coming on May 21st.
Oh, I've seen them. All over L.A., absolutely.
All over L.A. Yeah. Well, apparently, the big date for those who believe that the end times are near is December 21st, 2012, which is the day when the world is supposed to end.
The Mayan calendar ends on December 12th, yes.
Oh, are you a believer?
I just know. It's been widely reported.
Well, the believers say that there are going to be, luckily, a handful of places on Earth where people will be safe, including southern France. How convenient. And as Christopher Worth reports, the locals there are getting ready for an influx of visitors.
The tiny, picturesque village of Bougouraches takes its name from the giant, flat-topped mountain that towers above it. Population here is just 189 people. Dominique Lemans is one of them. As he throws feed out for his chickens, he says peculiar things happen here.
I see in the sky a strange light.
Lemans described a light zigzagging across the sky.
And I'm sure it's not plane, it's not Airbus or Boeing or helicopter.
Whatever it was, alleged sightings like this are becoming more common. The village has become a magnet for New Age belief groups who predict the world is going to end next year on December 21st. Some convince the mountain will be a landing site for UFOs rescuing people from the mayhem. The mayor, Jean-Pierre Delorde, says he's seen websites imploring people to go to Bougouraches.
My concerns are simple. We can't accommodate people arriving here en masse. It would disrupt the tranquility of the town.
But even the mayor admits those newcomers could be a boost for Bougouraches' economy. The local B&B is getting calls about booking rooms for the apocalypse, and others have begun moving to the area to start businesses.
Okay. I will try without.
People like Odile Masounad, who goes by her spiritual name, Amkara. No, that's not a UFO. Amkara specializes in sound massage, so I gave it a go.
Christopher is in harmony.
She places a big metal bowl over my head and begins ringing it with a mallet.
Now you let the energy coming up.
Omkara plans to open a spiritual center here for therapies like this.
People are coming here from all over the world, but here they are very afraid of all these people coming like this.
So afraid, the mayor says he may decide to block off the roads leading into the village next year. In Bougouraches, France, I'm Christopher Worth for Marketplace.
Well, and finally, not only did George Washington help found our nation, Jeremy, he was also a big-time brewmaster. Did you know this? The guy liked to make some beer.
You know, presidents and alcohol, they really say, because Thomas Jefferson was like had a vineyard there
yes,
at Monticello.
Yeah, Monticello, anyway. Yeah. The New York Public Library has the handwritten recipe, and well, it's teaming up with a brewer in New York to recreate that beer, the George Washington beer. Now, the brew won't be sold commercially, but it will be offered at a couple of big shindigs in New York, including one at the library. There are a couple of other high-priced affairs that people can go and test this beer out. But for more authenticity, of course, you're going to down the beer with a powdered wig and wooden teeth, right? That's going to make you feel better. Certainly make you feel like you're circa 1787.
That's right. You got to, win in Rome.
or in Los Angeles, as I am, New York, as you are, Jeremy. The beer recipe, by the way, is at marketplace.org. You can check that out. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis.
And in New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.